I saw the Sex Pistols. They were terrible. I thought they were great. I wanted to get up and be terrible too. There wasn't a whole lot to do in Manchester, England in 1977. It was an industrial city that had watched its industry fade away. And so when 21-year-old Bernard Sumner saw the Sex Pistols, he also saw a way out of probable oblivion. And although he didn't know it, he was also on his way towards forming a band that would show an awful lot of people a way out of punk's dead end and go on to be one of the most influential groups of their time. The other members of the group were bassist Peter Hook and drummer Stephen Morris, and on vocals was Ian Curtis, moody and uncomfortable on stage, but a magnetic figure nonetheless. They called themselves Warsaw after their favorite track on David Bowie's album, Low, and dressed in black clothing. Britain's larger record companies ignored them, but Tony Wilson, a local broadcaster, was getting into the music business, and soon the rough demos we've just heard were cleaned up.
I was there in the backstage. Just like him around. I grew up not a changeling, but when the first time around, I could see all the weakness. I could pick all the faults, but I could see all the faintness. Just a stick in your throat. Pray what you. Pray what you. Pray what you.
And, because they knew it was difficult to shock people anymore, they changed their name to Joy Division, the name given to the prostitutes' quarters of the German concentration camps. The shock tactic worked all too well. Despite a lot of help from avant-garde DJ John Peel at the BBC, radio shunned their first single, Transmission.
Radio.
But, as it had for the Sex Pistols, the furor worked in their favor, and when Britain's more intellectually inclined adolescents got a hold of the gloomy, brooding sound the band was producing, they started buying records by the truckload. Tony Wilson's label, Factory, took off like a shot. Thanks to stunning neoclassic art direction by Peter Saville, Factory stuff looked like nothing else on the market, and since they numbered everything they did, with Fac 1 being a poster announcing the first gig of the Factory Club, and Fac 10, Joy Division's first album, Unknown Pleasures, they had a unique image. By the spring of 1980, Joy Division knew they'd recorded their masterpiece, and the band prepared to launch its first U.S. tour to promote it. As the band gathered at Manchester Airport on the morning of May 17th, they got horrible news. Ian Curtis had hung himself. Suddenly, the lyrics to their new record took on new meaning. What happened next was bad. Curtis became the focus of a cult of depressed teenagers. There may have even been copycat suicides, I can't remember. The remaining three band members knew they had to do something, but what? Bernard Sumner asked his girlfriend, Jillian Gilbert, if she'd play electronic keyboards and turn the band's sound around. Using the name New Order, the band rose from the ashes of Joy Division. If anything, New Order became more popular than Joy Division ever was. Q humanizing the synthesizer, they've managed the nearly impossible task of pleasing both Joy Division's bohemian audience and Black Street Kids. They've made a string of fantastic videos, including one for their hit True Faith that includes signing the lyrics for the deaf. And there's Bizarre Love Triangle, one of my top 10 singles of the 80s. They own a bar called Dry, Fac 201, in Manchester these days. So here's a toast to a band that's really been born again.